That's out toward right center field. Going back on it is Zimmer. At the wall. Gone! Big fly, Ohtani-san!
I remember watching Japanese phenom Shohei Ohtani's first MLB home run earlier this season. Here he was, a pitcher who could hit, a slugger who could throw, a dual threat the likes of which hadn't been seen in Major League Baseball since the Bambino himself, Babe Ruth.
That is awesome!
As Ohtani trotted to the dugout, his teammates lined up at the railing and stared out towards the field. It was the beginnings of the classic silent treatment.
Center field, his teammates love him so much they gave him the silent treatment.
While his teammates ignored him, Ohtani high-fived the air and hugged a teammate from behind until the rest of the club broke ranks and finally celebrated with the rookie. But there was this one moment, right when Ohtani walked down the stairs and saw he wasn't getting a hero's welcome. His pace slowed. He took off his helmet. His shoulders sagged just a little. He's facing away from the camera, but it's clear he's confused, maybe even hurt at his teammate's silence. Then he realized what was happening and rolled with it. But that one moment of isolation got me to thinking about the challenges of being an international athlete. They have the same pressures and scrutiny that all professional athletes face, but they manage them far from home, separated from friends and family, sometimes not even speaking the country's native tongue. I wanted to know what it's like to pack up your cleats, hop on a plane, and start a new life where the only continuity is the grind of playing a professional sport. So I turned to the American League with the most foreign-born players, Major League Soccer. At New York City Football Club, or NYCFC, I talked to recent arrival Anton Tinnerholm, who left his home country of Sweden in January to play soccer in the States. I asked him for his story to try to understand a small part of the experience of simultaneously building a career, building the U.S. soccer fan base, and building a new home in a foreign nation, one where everyone might not even speak the same language. This is The Narrative. I'm Harry Swartout.
Now working to the top of the box, ahead of it, Villa squares the cross, goes off of Ciani, onto a Tinnerholm!
Tinnerholm gör en volt i slutet! Efter att ha vallat in två i första halvlek,
It's small things, but the football language is special, and it's more about learning how your teammates playing than get to know like everything they say.
On NYCFC's game day roster, 10 players out of 25 are listed as international, and many more than that hail from other countries. There's a good chance a player, no matter where they're from, will not understand their teammate's first language. From Venezuela to Sweden to Costa Rica to Spain, the locker room feels like the international terminal at an airport and sounds like the Tower of Babel. But that doesn't really bother the players as much as it might seem. Here's NYCFC midfielder and Anton Tinnerholm's fellow Nordic compatriot, Alex Ring, from Finland. I caught up with Ring after a match in the locker room, so it's a little bit loud.
Doesn't matter if they speak Spanish, English, I think everyone has a same language, which understand each other somehow, and I think it's normal. I mean, you always have lots of nationalities in a team.
Luckily for Anton, and most European players these days, English is taught in public schools. Anton's been getting ready to speak English since grade school, and that's why he sounds so good.
Thank you very much, by the way, but we're starting pretty early in the school, and that's important. We know that English is a main language, but when I'm arriving here, I noticed that you have a lot of people who's talking Spanish. And also in my team, it's like half of the team is speaking Spanish, so maybe I have to take some Spanish lessons as well.
I'll just turn it. Just asking him questions.
Learning a common tongue isn't just for locker room unity. Communication can mean the difference between a goal and a stop on the field.
He's waiting for a shout from his goalkeeper. And if you're Sean Johnson here, you've got to call him off it. You've just got to go up and claim that one.
Tinnerholm plays right defenseman. On his side, the winger is Jose Medina from Paraguay, and he speaks Spanish.
You have to find the small words that can make it easier for the Spanish people as well, especially if you have them close to you. I'm playing with a guy from South America now as a right wing, and I'm speaking to him at if you want to go right and left, izquierda, derecha. So that it's easier for me, and especially for him, if I can learn some small, easy word in Spanish, and same the other way, of course.
The teammates now have to navigate three options for left and right: Swedish, Spanish, and English. But it helps that they necessarily spend a lot of time with each other. Many players know what it's like to come from away, and they extend a helping hand to other immigrant players trying to settle in. Alex Ring had been in America for a couple of years when the club signed Tinnerholm, so he made sure Anton knew what he was in for.
Yeah, we already contacted each other before he came here, just to make things easier, because I know I've been through that last year. So, yeah, I've been taking care of him and Joe since they arrived. If you ask them, they'll say, tell the team to you.
They told me that it was very professional around the club, that the staff is very professional and doing a great work. And for me, it was important that everything else around the club was professional as well.
Ring's endorsement encouraged Anton to sign with the club. When the Swede stepped off the plane, his first experience of America was marching directly to NYCFC team facilities for training camp.
The first 25 days we were on a training camp, so for me it was training, sleeping, eating. That's it for the first 25 days. But it was a good thing, because then you're getting to know all the teammates and all the staff, and that's important. Now when you have a time off, I'm exploring New York with my fiance. It's amazing. I love the days off here, and especially now when the weather is getting a little bit warmer. If you want to do something, you can do whatever you want to, and that's amazing with the city.
You can do whatever you want in New York City, sure, but maybe not so much in other MLS cities like Columbus or Salt Lake City. America isn't just the movie version of NYC that players see abroad.
New York, in a lot of ways, is simultaneously the most American and the most un-American place in America.
That's Tom Foster, a huge NYCFC fan born in the UK. Fans from abroad like Tom often have an idea of America that's largely anchored by a pop culture conception of New York City.
You think of whatever kind of New York cliche you can conjure up, you know, whether it's Home Alone 2 or whether it's King Kong, you know, most people's first impression of America will come from a picture of New York on a television screen or a movie theater, which I think sometimes means that when you're a foreigner and you come over to the United States, you get that disconnect when you suddenly see a strip mall in Columbus, Ohio, or a shopping mall in Kansas City, which is not to take away from any of those places. And you realize that, you know, as an outsider coming to New York, you probably share more in common with other New Yorkers than other Americans do with New Yorkers. Because in a way, it's a city of outsiders. It's a city of people who came here for a particular reason. When you travel outside of New York, you start to see what America really is like, and in many ways, that's nothing like New York at all.
One of the main reasons America's cities differ so widely is that many of them are not particularly close to one another. Traveling across 3,000 miles of land, different climates, and four separate time zones poses an obstacle to athletes that rely heavily on routine. It's not quite like that in Europe.
Yeah, it's quite different for me. It's like travel almost 1.5 hour in Sweden. Now it's 6 hour flight and 3 hours time difference. So of course it's taking time, but I think it's more to just get there early and get used to the weather. Probably the weather's gonna get better here, because now it's Swedish weather, but probably it's gonna get better here so as well now.
Not only are European football clubs closer together, they're older. Much older. MLS is one of America's youngest leagues for one of the world's oldest sports.
The club in Malmo is over 100 years, and Åtvidaberg, my first club, first professional club, is also over 100 years. So if you compare that, this club started 5 years ago and Malmo started 100 years ago, you can see that it takes time.
When people talk about football culture in Europe, I think you're talking about, you know, a culture that's existed for hundreds and hundreds of years, and with football culture, that's, you know, it still existed for hundreds and hundreds of years. Football culture in the UK, for example, is built up over decades and decades of experience. In New York, we look at what came before us and it was scene missing, citation needed. You know, we don't have anything to draw on. I've kind of learned through talking to fans from other cultures how, you know, there's a different way of enjoying the game, a different way of experiencing the game from just, you know, trying to involve yourself in the proceedings. Sometimes you can involve yourself in the proceedings just by being as loud as possible.
The void of tradition in American soccer can actually be its biggest asset. Consider the uniquely American MLS pregame experience. The league borrows some of the best parts of other American sports and rolls them up into the soccer festivities.
It's more spectacular before the game. You're just walking around in the middle of a restaurant where the fans is drinking beers and the smell is about a hamburger and stuff like that. And then you're going out to the pitch and it's fireworks and stuff like that. In Sweden, it's more like you're going into the field, it's a song, and then you play the game. Here, it's more like they want something more.
And the spectacle is bringing in people who aren't necessarily the normal set going to live professional sports. Just like MLS players, the fans for soccer in the United States are much more international. They're trailblazing what kind of fans Anton can expect to come out to see NYCFC play, and molding the game with their support.
There are fans of NYCFC and other MLS teams who see it as their solitary mission to go and make as much noise and as much ruckus as possible, and as making yourself just seem as big and as intimidating as you possibly can. Watching football in Europe is often a very homogenous experience where, you know, fans are uniquely white, middle class or working class on the older side. Fans like myself, a lot of the times you only see, you know, that South American, Latin American influence on the game from things like the World Cup. It's kind of refreshing to be part of a fan base that reflects the product on the field and, you know, the product of the city that we're trying to represent.
It's a cycle, whatever the opposite of a vicious cycle is. The game changes to fit the fans. The fans change to fit the game, and the two become intertwined. That's how you get subtle variations between leagues in Europe, and the MLS is no different. They see a different type of game each week, and so they appreciate different aspects of the sport.
During games, I'll see people going absolutely ballistic for things that I would have completely ignored watching the game back home. I think if you were to play the same game on tape to English fans, you would get completely different noises to the same game played to American fans. Case in point, I find that there is a reverence for goalkeepers in America that just does not exist in England. I don't even see goalkeepers as footballers, personally. They're playing a different game. You know, they're using their hands, for God's sake. Over here, like, goalkeepers are gods. You know, our goalkeeper in the first two seasons was revered, despite the fact he was objectively probably the worst player on the team.
Onigiri and Tim Howard's legs saved the US from going behind early again.
But even star goalkeepers like Tim Howard aren't terribly well recognized in America. In Europe, soccer stars are like rock stars. Footy heroes are in ads, on social media, and splashed across television across the pond. Without padding or helmets to get in the way, players look about the same on the pitch as they do on the street. And that is going to get you noticed.
Back in Sweden, especially in Malmö, people recognize you everywhere. So of course it's different. It's not like you're going and shopping and people recognize you here. You're nobody. But for me that's a good feeling.
Not being mobbed on the streets allows Anton Tinnerholm to live in the city like a huge number of other immigrants do. They walk around. They take the subway. They visit the Statue of Liberty and the Met. They meet new friends. They ask their friends where to eat. And yeah, if you thought I was going to go through a whole piece on NYCFC and not talk about New York pizza, well.
Oh, absolutely. You got to get a slice from New York City.
Of course, slice of pizza.
There's nothing like a New York City slice.
The cheaper, the better, in my opinion.
Everyone knows it's all about the fold. You got to get the thin crust pizza here in New York City.
As a New Yorker, I can confirm New York-style pizza is the best. But it's not exactly the pre-game meal Anton's looking for.
I have special diet, what do you call it, like it's pasta and falukorv is special for me. I'm always eating that before a game. I'm eating it for like 20 years now, and I have to change that. For me, I got plenty of routines before the game. I want to follow them, but now when you arrive into a new country, it's not that easy.
For all the things New York has, it's not Sweden. It's not England either. It's New York. It can approximate things, but not necessarily duplicate them.
I got some English friends in New York, and she came to me and said, well, you know, we want to have an English breakfast. We haven't had a proper English breakfast in ages. Like, there's this place that does them in the village. We should just go and do it. And I went there, and it was full of kitsch English memorabilia, pictures of the Queen everywhere, doilies, Victoria sponges, the whole shebang. And we sat, and we had a very expensive English breakfast that cost maybe three times what it would have cost back home. And I kind of thought, why are we doing this?
Anton has found a Swedish restaurant he likes and a place in Williamsburg that sells Swedish candy. But no one sells quality time. Everyone Anton knew before January, except for his fiance, is on the other side of an ocean, 6 hours ahead.
I'm trying to speak with them so the much I can in phone, but that also thing with the time difference. We training in the mornings all the time, and when I'm coming home, it's evening or night in back home. So sometimes it can be hard to keep the contact, but if you really want that, that's no problem. And as I said before, they can come here instead.
He speaks English, he plays for NYCFC, he lives in America. But for Anton Tinnerholm, every game, even the ones at Yankee Stadium, is an away game. Sweden is his home. But America is an adventure.
I like Sweden. It's the best country in the world. It's cold, of course, but it's safe. And I think the media and social media, especially now, it's talking so much shit about Sweden. You're always feeling like you're home when you're back there.
Framåt Malmö!
It was a different atmosphere in Sweden, to be fair. But now we've been at some places here in America, which is like adventure, something extra. That's amazing.
Anton Tinnerholm sees playing abroad as an adventure. But he's just one story out of hundreds of athletes playing abroad. Others may be stuck hopping country to country, toiling in the minors, or unable to communicate. For them, the hope is that they'll adjust to their new homes and that playing abroad will enhance the game for players and fans alike. Special thanks for this episode of The Narrative goes out to Anton Tinnerholm, Alex Ring, Woody Wilder, NYCFC, Tom Foster, and Cameron Albert Deitch. If you like the show, leave us a rating or review. It helps put The Narrative in front of more people. Or better yet, just tell a friend. You can tweet about the show using the hashtag SINarrative. I'm at Harry Swartout on Twitter. And as always, for more narratives moving the world of sport, log on to si.com.